Phil. I'm from All Ears. We do a Disney podcast. This is Stacey, my co-host. Say hi, Stacey.
Hi, Stacey.
I'm Katrina. I write for Game Ranks. It's a video game website. We focus on comics and geek culture as well every now and then.
I'm Michael from Just for Fun magazine. We're a pop culture and toy magazine.
I'm Bean. I'm from the Super Network. We're just a film reviewing site.
I'm Carl. I'm from the OuterHaven.net. Basically, video game, pop culture, and everything else.
Okay, well, we're from the Daily Dialogue. We're a Facebook page, but we're a big Facebook. I kind of got on it, but I also run a YouTube channel called Forgive Us Our Press Passes, where I do video stuff for the Daily Dalek, and they let me get away with it.
How does this work? Who starts?
Oh, that's
I'll go first.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Melbourne.
My pleasure. It's fun to be back.
Shamefully, I know you as Goofy, but you've also done a whole bunch of other work as well. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Space Jam.
My first movie was Who Framed Roger Rabbit back in 1987, I guess that was.
All fantastic work. Are there any voices that you haven't gotten the chance to use professionally that you would like to?
Most of them. As a voice actor, what you like to do is play and just perform. That's the goal. So any and all things. I still audition all the time. One of my recent ones that I didn't even, and sometimes when you actually do a role, you don't get until the movie comes out to see that they use it in a bigger role than I'd imagined. I did the movie Sing, which was out recently, and they bumped my part up to actually a credited character rather than just the background voices and stuff.
Nice.
I was a dog reporter in that. And,
so
another dog, right? So I'm Pluto. There's a lot of them that I haven't been able. I'd love to do, SpongeBob. That would be a great one. That was one of my favorites, and all the ones growing up. And I've had a fortune, been very fortunate to fill in some of the ones I grew up with Mel Blanc. And I've done a lot of Warner Brothers as opposed to Disney as well. Foghorn Leghorn, Sylvester the Cat, Yosemite Sam. I've done Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and occasional things. Once I got to do Kermit the Frog, but it didn't make it to air.
But I can still do the voice.
That is so amazing. Do I say all my questions?
One go.
Okay.
If it gets back.
Sorry, this is the first time we've done
Me too.
If it gets back.
Hi Bill, it's lovely to meet you. Thank you for coming to Melbourne. I wanted to ask you a bit about your role in video games, voice acting in the LucasArts game Sam & Max Hit the Road. So,
oh wow, oh, yeah.
I was listening to the voice and I just thought I can almost hear a similarity in Goofy, and it makes sense. It's the same voice actor. It's really convincing, and I just wanted to know phonetically, how did you make those voices different?
Between, say, Goofy or and Sam and Max?
Yeah.
Sam was actually, they wanted a detective. So I was thinking the Sam Spade kind of Humphrey Bogart thing right there. But he had such great, and Steve Purcell, who wrote Sam and Max, was just a brilliant dialogue in that game. One of the best games I've ever done. And so it was someone that could be kind of deadpan and still deliver a comedy line. So I was thinking Johnny Carson. Who was, of course, late night host in America. Johnny Carson had a voice kind of like this, and so I kind of mixed that and slowed it down, put a little bit more Humphrey Bogart in it. Then before long, it became kind of like this. This is the way that finally Sam came out, and that's the one that they liked, so.
I see. Thank you very much.
Excellent. A lot of your career, the perceived career, the one that everyone sees, rotates around, and I know no one's mentioned it yet, but Goofy.
Yeah. Of course, yeah, he's here.
In interviews I've seen of you do, you seem to be not just the person who does voice, but a real fan of Goofy. And you mentioned that because you grew up on a lot of these cartoons. How is it being now a big part of something you were a massive fan of?
It's a little surreal. I was a stand-up comedian impressionist for about 5 years before I came out to Hollywood. Mostly I did, political figures, real actors, impressions. Goofy really wasn't my repertoire, certainly not in my act. But he was my favorite Disney character, always has been. I remember watching Wonderful World of Color sitting on my dad's lap when I was a kid. And he just registered with me. And maybe that's why I got the job, because I never thought of him as just kind of this dumb yokel. He was simple, yes, but he had this kind of homespun intelligence. So I never thought him as dumb. And a lot of people that do the voice make him sound dumb. And I never went for that. So yeah, I had a definite love of Goofy growing up. And getting a chance to do it is like, you never know how big this is going to go. You know, they don't give you, here's your plaque, you're now the Goofy forever. You know, I'm still a day player. Every job I do is a new contract. Never have been an employee of Disney. I'm like the plumber. They have a job, I go in, I do it, I go home and they pay me. So it's like I still feel like a journeyman when I do a job, but now I've done about 4,000 jobs for Disney and I think I've got it pretty well locked in.
Excellent, thanks for that. So.
In terms of the industry, you've been around for quite a while. What do you think has been the biggest innovation or changes that might have come through doing voiceover work that you've experienced?
When I first started, we were still recording to tape, 24-track recording sessions, and we would do ensemble. In other words, all the actors would be like this around a studio, each with a microphone and a script, and we would do it like a radio play, where I would be talking to Mickey, gosh, Mickey, howdy, gosh, Goofy, oh boy, you know, and then we'd talk back and forth, and I could play off of the other actors. Now, with nonlinear editing and Pro Tools, it's easier for everyone's schedule that, okay, Bill, you come in at Tuesday at 2, Brett, who does Mickey, will come in at 3 o'clock, and then Pete will come in at 4, and Minnie at 5, and then they take the best takes of all of those, and I just do my lines, and then they edit them together in post. That's the biggest change. Unfortunately, I don't like it as much, because it's much more fun to play with your friends, you know, give and take, and improvising. Also, with non-linear editing and not having the other actors there, I have to rely on the director a lot more. I have to know, well, how far away is Mickey? If he's standing right here, I've got to say, gosh, howdy, Mick. If he's over there, howdy, Mick. And if he's like up on a balloon somewhere, howdy, Mick. I have to keep that in my mind. So the spatial dimensions and all of that kind of stuff and the situation I have to keep in my mind, because there's no reference for it without the other actors.
Hi Bill, how are you? I just wanted to ask, one of your earliest roles that you appeared in was actually in RoboCop, and I just wanted to find out if you could tell us what it was like working on that film.
Oh, that was great. That I did that back in Dallas, actually, in 1986, just a month or so before I moved to Los Angeles. I was just, you know, I'd done a few little television bits and was doing the stand-up at that time. And, you know, agent just said, well, they got this movie, they want a reporter. And I went down and Paul Verhoeven was there and I just kind of did my announcer's voice for him and he thought that was great. I remember being terrified because it was the first definitely big budget movie that I'd ever done. And in my scene, which finally, after about waiting around for 9 hours, took place around 2:30 in the morning, and it was about 95 degrees, or what is that, about 38 degrees Celsius in Dallas. Peter Weller was just dying in the outfit. They were blowing air up his sleeve after every take. And I remember I had memorized my one paragraph that I had. It's burned into my memory somewhere. I had to say, terrorism has never been a factor in this city's politics before, but all that changed today when former city councilman Ron Miller entered City Hall with a gun. He's now upstairs in a second floor office holding Mayor Clifford Gibson and members of his personal staff hostage. Lieutenant Hitchcock, what's next? Well, as I blocked that, Paul Verhoeven said, well, that's too long. Cut this, this, and this. And I just spent a month learning this. So, if you see what they finally used, I'm just kind of stammering, remembering what to cut and what to do, looking at the corner of my eye where these cops' cars were just screaming in behind me, and I'm not sure if they hired real stunt doubles or stunt drivers. It might be,
yeah, you just driving up 3 feet from me.
And so that was a look of real terror that I had on my face, but it was a lot of fun. They also had to cut my hair before each scene, and I didn't like it that short, and I grew it out, and I had to go back about 3 months later, and then about 3 months after that to do another scene. So I had to have my hair cut three times, and that was the worst part of it. Also on that, my wife dropped me off on the set one day, and we almost ran over the Ed 209, the big fold. They had the top of it laying on, and my wife was backing up, and people were going, "No!" Almost destroyed the monster before it even got on film.
Well, reading a bit about your bio, it says your latest project is a movie called Generational Sins.
Yes, yes. I actually was a sheriff on that. It was through a friend of mine that actually was a student of mine. I was teaching him voice acting, and he asked me and my wife to go to a read-through of a script he had written. The director liked the way I read a part of Sheriff Randall, so they took me up to Pennsylvania, and I got to appear in the film and break up a bar fight scene as a cop. And I haven't done really much on-camera work in an awful long time. And it was great fun, and I'm actually reading with them for another film right now.
That's what the question was, what's it like stepping out from voice into front of a camera?
It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of similarities. A lot of people think that people come to me and say, you know, oh, people tell me I have a great voice, I should be in cartoons or something. Well, that's kind of like saying I have a great guitar. The question is not whether you have a great guitar or your instrument, but can you use it? Are you a good guitarist? Are you a good actor? So that's my advice to kids that want to get into this. I say take acting first. Whether there's a camera there or not, it's still acting.
Thank you.
Can we go back to Amy? Ready again?
Well, this one sort of takes off that question. Apart from practicing in the mirror, do you have any advice of developing a voice technique?
Well, voice techniques are many. Basically, a voice is made out of three things. It's made out of the tone, which is what your throat does. Is it a Mickey-like, a falsetto? And if I talk like that with a falsetto, I'm kind of in the Mickey ballpark there. Or is it like a gravelly little voice and I would talk like that? Next, articulation, what your tongue does. That's where the accents come in. I could talk like this and I could put on a New York accent, I'm like a gangster. Or I could put on an English accent and I'm like one of these, oh, it's the night for the Ripper, it is. So that sort of thing. And then the third part is the situation. In other words, is he standing there in a park? Is he standing in a house that's on fire? Who's he talking to? Why is he talking to? The emotional impact of the scene. Those three things are what you have to think of. Two of them creating the voice, the third, what's the voice doing and why?
Thank you.
Acting 101.
Right? I was interested in asking about some of your current projects that you're working on. If I'm not mistaken, you'll be doing the voice of Goofy for Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yes, yes.
Will you be voicing all of the international versions as well as the English versions?
No, it's interesting. The Kingdom Hearts series was produced originally in Japan. So I am hearing the Japanese Goofy in my headphones. I have to replace it with English. And that's quite weird. Because Goofy in other languages, just, you know, it's such a dialect kind of character. In, you know, Japanese, I hear like, oh, doishimakacho, oh! It's really weird. And then I have to, come on, Sora the Heartless, or come. And so, but doing a game like that is different because you skip around an awful lot because depending on what the player does. And I never get a sense of the game. People tell me, well, what's the plot? I don't know, because I'm doing page 18, page 84, page 128, little pieces of it. Until it's totally done, I have no idea what it's like. But Disney has a division that does nothing but find characters in all of their projects in about 40-some languages. So occasionally I'll do something in Spanish or something if they need, or saying just a couple of words in different languages. But no, they go around the world and find Goofies and all sorts of languages.
Brilliant, thank you.
Okay. Having spent some time with you away from the convention world,
I'm sorry.
One of the things that I've always loved from the minute I met you and that stands out to me is your enthusiasm for what you do, having been doing it for so long. And I was wondering, how do you maintain that enthusiasm? Is that a mindset that you put in place?
It's the best job in the world. It's, you get to go play. I mean, you get to create these worlds. I don't have to get makeup and hair and sit around waiting for a shot. You go in, you get to instantly play, and you become whatever you're. It's just fun. And, it's not too physically rough on you, unless you have, like, a video game where you're, like, screaming and things like that can be rough. But, no, it's just a lot of fun. I've always enjoyed doing little plays and acting, and I feel almost guilty taking the money. I will continue to do that. But I think, boy, this, you know, I should have to work sometime.
In regards to the different styles of voice acting, you've done, animation and video games, you've even done theme park attractions.
Yes.
Out of all of those, which one is most enjoyable for you in terms of, like, format and performance?
I really enjoy, we don't do it much anymore, but we used to go down to Walt Disney World when they would have, like, a new attraction. And they would have radio remotes where we would go from one table, this is KISM in Detroit, and we're talking with Mickey and Goofy. And I would get to improvise as the characters with the other actors. And that's when it really came alive, because I'm sitting here with Mickey and Minnie, and we're just riffing and answering whatever the DJ's asking. That's the most honest, I guess, because that I get to put whatever I think Goofy should say is what goes in it. Whereas if I'm just interpreting a script, I do the best job of what they're trying to say with it. That's definitely the most fun. Probably the least fun is when I had to do a talking watch where I was going, the time is 12:01 a.m. The time is 12:02 a.m. The time is 12:03 a.m. That gets real, about 2 o'clock really gets hard.
Well, you've been in so many different projects as Goofy, film, TV, video games, but which is one of your favorite ones your favorite portrayals as Goofy in either one of those mediums?
Probably a Goofy movie, for several reasons. First of all, it was not the first time I'd seen a theatrical presentation of Goofy, but it was first any of the main Disney characters starred in his own movie, and they picked Goofy. Number two, I got to see it with a real audience, so I could hear them react to what I did in the studio and only imagine the reaction that I would get. And seeing it come alive on a movie screen in a movie theater is really cool. Also, my son was about the same age. That was in 1995. My son was about 5 or 6 years old when that came out. So it was kind of a real bonding thing with me and my son, as it was with Goofy and his son. And that was kind of cool. We got to go to one of the early screenings, and I noticed my son was coming out, and he was crying. And I said, well, what's the matter, buddy? Didn't you like the movie? And he said, well, when Goofy went over the waterfall, I thought that was you. He was just kind of getting the idea. He thought everybody did this for a living. We went to Florida, and his grandfather said, well, Austin, I have to go to work now. And he goes, well, what voice do you do? And so he's a Hollywood kid.
Being a voice actor, and with over 100 celebrity impressions and dialects, have you ever found any celebrity really hard to master?
Oh, yeah. They're all hard. Actually, believe it or not, some of the more subtle ones are difficult. To get the nuances of, like Johnny Carson was very difficult. There were a lot of, the more different it is from your voice, quite often it's easier. Like, Wolfman Jack, it was just a deep, kind of a DJ voice right there. That was difficult. Getting the nuances of, I've had to do a lot of the presidents in television shows over the years. Like, Bill Clinton's not too hard to do. All you gotta do is hold your thumb like that and look at the babes. And some of them kind of come pretty easily. Reagan, you didn't even have to talk with him. It's, well, you know, that's all you've got to do for him. So some of them are, there's a lot of them that are, I'm trying to think of which are the most difficult to do. But they all take work, I guess, but the ones closest to your own voice seem to be the hardest, because you just want to kind of pop back into your voice. So the farther away it is from your voice, generally, the easier it is.
Thank you.
out of all the movies that you have done and games, and did you ever think that this one's going to be big?
I'm always hoping. You can tell sometimes. I knew when we did Beauty and the Beast, I did some background voices in that. And because we only saw a reel or two of it that we were voicing, like crowds, people and stuff. And yeah, you get a sense that that's it. Or we did some other ones that I won't name that. Yeah, you're just thinking, well, this will never make. But sometimes you get totally amazed. The movie Sing, which I just did recently, and I'm a dog reporter again. They were very hush hush about that. They didn't even call it Sing. It was just called something like. They called it Lunchbox Project. That's all it was. I had no idea. And I didn't even know it was a singing competition. I just had these random lines, and I got no sense of what the movie was until I saw it in theaters. Like, oh, that's what it is. Okay. I had no idea. But sometimes you get a sense that it'll be big. Other times, you're just kind of thrown for a loop. Or ones that you really like don't turn out big. Hey, they'd all be million-dollar grocers if people knew, you know, how to predict that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
I have a question about your voice acting the Tasmanian Tiger series.
Oh yeah.
Three games. I know you voiced the first three, but I'm not sure if you voiced the fourth one. And I wanted to ask, do you know why you didn't return for the fourth installment?
You know, you never know why you don't get something, because they just don't call for some reason. Maybe they forgot I was in the first one. Maybe they just found something they like better. Who knows? You just never know. That's part of the business. You'll find out. Like with the Sam and Max, they did a cartoon show, which was non-union. I'm a union actor. They took that to Canada to cast, which is why I didn't do that. And so maybe they got on that non-union bandwagon, and you never know with all the politics and stuff. A lot of it's politics, too. Right. So you just stay grateful for the ones you get and say, hey, I'm available if you need me.
Thank you.
I'm certain that Goofy is your most requested voice to do. Is there one, aside from that, you really enjoy doing? Or?
Oh, yeah, of live actors. Pat Buttram, who used to be on Green Acres, and his last movie was a Goofy movie. And I got to sit with him before we went in, the actor Pat Buttram. And he was 83 years old, and I'd always liked him as a sidekick to Gene Autry and stuff. And he was a funny guy. So it's just a fun one to do, and whenever you do that, just people smile. I got to do that voice at the Gene Autry Western Heritage Museum last Christmas in a play. We recreated a real play, a radio play from that Gene Autry did back in 1940, and I got to play Pat Buttram in front of a live audience. That was a big thrill for me, and I got a lot of applause for that. That was
Disneyland, they've got all the Goofy characters walking around the suits, taking the photos and everything. Have they ever requested for you to sort of do your voice via like a remote, or even put yourself in the suit?
I've done that once. I put the head on backstage once just to see what it was like. And you cannot, you have no peripheral vision, and you have to look down at people's feet to keep Goofy's head level. So they're in the suit kind of looking like this all the time. And in 30 years, not one of them has ever broken character and talked to me. I'll go up and, oh, I'm your voice. And then they all, but they always do it pantomime unless we get backstage. And then they'll, oh my gosh, I'm so happy to meet you. I wouldn't want to do that job, though, because they're going, hey, when it's 100 degrees, I'm sweating here, and kids are kicking me. And so, you know, when we do a show, if we do it right one time, that's fine. Then they've got to do it every day, five times a day in some parade. I don't envy them at all, but they're very... I occasionally at Disneyland, I will to just liven stuff up. I don't give myself away, but if I see a father like holding a kid and he's tired and he's in the line for Pirates of the Caribbean, and I'll just go, gorge. And the kid will like look around. Hey, Goofy, shut up, go to sleep.
I'll play with it once in a while.
We're gonna have to wind it up, guys. So last question.
Oh yeah, sure, no worries. I have to ask, as somebody who has a main staple of Disney, what are your favorite Disney films?
My favorite Disney films? Actually, my first, one of my early ones, I've always been a science nerd. And I remember when I was a kid, I saw The Absent-Minded Professor, and I remember I had a little chemistry set, and I tried to make flubber, and it just didn't work. Nothing flew. And it just, but I loved that. I loved Mary Poppins was a great one when I grew up. I wasn't much on musicals, really. I liked the really funny films. Other ones, well, of course, you know, gosh, Pinocchio I loved. It scared the hell out of me. I don't want to turn into a donkey. And Bambi was great. That era, you know, I saw that when I was a kid. Those were some of my favorites over the years. In the more recent, Little Mermaid, Lion King is one of my favorites of all time. Of course, a Goofy movie has a special part of my life. And the Pixar movies, too. Yeah, I'm just a big kid now. I'm more of a kid now than I was when I was a kid.
Oh, thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Well, that was easy.